on America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned. You preach your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos, and welcome especially to one of our Thursday shows. Love these shows because it's actually, I would say, my favorite day of the week. We have a wonderful guest in studio. We have a studio audience and a great, more in-depth conversation just basically about saving America and most especially saving Texas. So today we have joining us in studio, and I'm thrilled that he could be here today, our Texas Agricultural Commissioner, Sid Miller. And around the country, certainly around the state, but really around the country, when you picture this guy from Texas with a big white hat, and he's always, he's really, really prominent at rodeos and advocacy for the Texas agriculture, and really in the political scene. He's got quite a lengthy history in the Texas political scene. I'll quickly mention he was formerly a Texas state representative serving Texas in the Texas State House, and I have the years here from 2001 or so. We'll ask him. Anyway, he was in the Texas legislature a long time and really became an advocate for kind of all things Texas. He's been serving as a Texas Agricultural Commissioner since 2015, which is a big job in the big state of Texas. It's our industry, it's our thing in Texas. So he advocates for farmers and for ranchers and for the people who want to buy the produce, the meat, the food. He really speaks up for one of the most important industries in Texas. But he's also, probably based on the time he spent in the Texas State House, a real advocate on the political scene in Texas for all sorts of candidates. He looks at races closely, makes decisions, and he endorses in those races. So he's just very active politically as agricultural commissioner. So please welcome to the show, Sid Miller.
Thank you.
Okay, I had it in my head. You were in the Texas State Legislature from 2001 till
13.
So 13.
Six terms, yes.
Six terms, 2001, 2013. So we already had this conversation last time you were here, that you saw a lot of change in the Texas legislature during that time. I mean, you saw...
Oh, well, a lot of change. When I came in 2001, we had a Democrat speaker.
Unthinkable.
So that was unusual. That seemed like a long time ago, right?
Yeah.
And then through redistricting, we were able to turn it around. We actually at one time had a supermajority in the House, 105 Republican members out of the 150, and that was under Speaker Tom Craddock.
Yep.
And then after Tom was, a big coup there, and Tom lost his chair.
It was a big coup,
And Joe Strauss was, I think he was, I don't know, four or five terms himself.
Yeah, and I know we talked about a lot last time you were here, so I won't go into it again much, except to say that people around the country look at Texas and they assume, well, at least Texas, solid red, they get things done there, they get the, and they, we do get a lot of conservative agenda items done. But as the Texas House has shifted to a different system of picking the speaker, where we end up with a speaker who's friendlier really to the Democrats than to the Republicans, even though he has an R by his name, it's led to a lot of battles in Texas, just a lot of battles. And you were part of the Texas Heist film trying to expose that.
Yeah. Well, what in Texas, even though we have the majority in the governor's mansion, the Senate, and the House, the Democrats still run the Texas House. I mean, that's, how does that happen? We're the only Republican-led legislature that appoints Democrats chairmen of major committees. We're the only state that does that, just defies odds. And what happens, the Speaker of the House is selected by the members. So 65 Democrats get together with 10 Rhino Republicans, and they pick the speaker. So that's how they get to be chairman of those committees, because the Speaker of the House is now committed to earning the votes of those Democrats. They keep him in office. So the Senate passes great legislation, kicks it out to the House, and it dies. And that's where we are today. And that's Debbie, I used to adhere to Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment, you know, don't speak evil of a fellow Republican. And then one day I woke up, my cowboy logic kicked in. I said, well, wait a minute. These guys aren't Republicans. I declared, you know, I'm open season on rhinos, you know, no bag limits. Let's go get them. So
no bag limits. That's good.
So, so far, I think we've got over 20 of them. So we're doing pretty good.
Absolutely. I want to share one example, which I just came across, or probably many more. But people might say, well, what difference does it make if the Texas Speaker of the House appoints Democrat chairs to committees? Because after all, there's still a Republican majority. And we know, we have talked about it last time, about how, you know, if you're the chair of a committee, you can just keep something from ever getting to the floor.
Yeah.
One great example, and you may know this one, but this I read about recently. So there was a Democrat from El Paso named Joe Moody, who was placed by our, you know, Speaker of the House, was an R by his name, placed in charge of the Criminal Jurisprudence Committee. That's a huge consequential committee. He's in favor of, he pushed defund the police. He has a history of promoting red flag gun confiscation proposals, and he wants to abolish the death penalty. So you tell me, are those Republican values in that guy?
Well, of course not. I mean, he's a liberal Democrat, about as liberal as you get. And, you know, we appoint not only committee chairs, but Speaker pro tem, you know, that should be definitely, you know, to preside over the body in the absence of the speaker. It's a Democrat presides over that. I'll give you one probably as good or better than that one. So how many people in here would agree with me that it's high time we stop China from buying our farmland?
Raise your hand. Yeah.
That's the stupidest thing we allow to happen. I can't believe we do that. So I've been working on this 5 years. I worked with Senator Kolkhorst. Good bill. She passed it out of the Senate, bipartisan, great bill. They amended it, made it better. It went to the State Affairs Committee in the House. Never got a hearing. Died.
Yep.
Because some Democrats didn't like it. I mean, and that's what we're up against. I mean, that should have been a no-brainer, you know, to pass that one.
Absolutely. It's a great example. And we could get off on this at length, but why would any American, a Democrat or Republican, wouldn't they want to pass that? Why wouldn't they want to say no China land ownership? We ought to be questioning the motives of the Democrats who don't want that. What was the reason?
Well, it's got down to, it's no longer Republicans versus Democrats. It's no longer conservative versus liberals. It's the patriots versus the traitors. I mean, they hate this country. They want to destroy it. And Biden's doing a pretty good job of it. And they're in bed with him. So why not let the Chinese take over?
Yeah, you know, it's an astonishing thing to me, because that does sound like something, if you ask the average sixth grader, they might be able to say, yeah, we probably shouldn't do that. That's not a good idea.
Yeah,
but we have adults who can't figure out why we should fight for that. So I want to commend your service in the legislature, because I know you were really an advocate and a strong advocate. And still today, while you're no longer making laws, and we're going to talk about your ag commissioner business and commission, but you really remain politically active. You mentioned you woke up one day with cowboy logic and realized, you know, all of us say we shouldn't criticize fellow Republicans. I never liked that Reagan's 11th commandment, because it kind of sounds like, it sounds a little bit sacrilegious, you know. 10 is good. I get those.
But everybody knows what you're talking about when you say it.
Oh, no, I know, but I mean, yes.
You know, campaigning against fellow Republicans, it's not the same thing. It's kind of like dancing with your sister. It's just not... You know, it's not the same thing. But I love campaigning against Democrats. And that's basically what these rhinos are.
It really is. And I know in the race, I want to turn to my race in a moment. But you also, I believe, have in the race right now, the incumbent Speaker of the House finally got a pretty strong challenger in a primary. Mm-hmm. And now they're headed in a runoff, which is in great state of Texas. May 28th is actual election day. You can start voting on Monday, May 28th, I think it is. You can start voting in those. So anyway, you've got involved in that race, correct?
Absolutely, from the start.
Yeah. And so the way you choose which races to be involved in, so that one's to get a real Republican as Speaker of the House. It's Covey. Covey's the guy.
Dave Covey.
Yep, so you got him. And you went through some other endorsements. What were your factors leading to, I mean, how'd you choose who you're going to support in these races?
Well, if they were a rhino, obviously, I'm against that. And, you know, if they were liberal and they killed our bills, I'm against that. One of the things was they endorsed my opponent in the last Republican primary. They're automatically on my list. So some of the incumbents did endorse my challenger, and even though he had no chance. So that got him on the list pretty quick. But yeah, that's it. I mean, these people that are killing our good conservative legislation, they got to go.
Yep, absolutely. You know, I don't want to go way in depth on the Paxton impeachment, but I will say a lot of what I think drove people to back some of the primary challengers was people didn't like how the Texas State House treated the Attorney General. They didn't like that there was this impeachment that didn't have any evidence. They didn't like the way it was handled. They didn't like it was, you know, kind of almost like under wraps, closed doors. No one knew a thing about it to Memorial Day weekend. And then it was announced. I mean, the entire thing had it was surreptitious. It was in violation of state law that says you can't impeach someone for conduct before that occurred prior to the most recent election. And yet those Republicans, enough Republicans, banded with the Democrats and pushed that through. I think that woke a lot of people up,
It certainly woke Ken Paxton up, and he got involved in primary. Now, just to be clear, I was involved before the impeachment trial.
Oh, yes.
I was in early. I was after those guys. And then the impeachment trial, that inflamed a lot of the grassroots. And it inspired Ken to get involved. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons to get involved in this race. Another third leg of the stool is school choice. That inflamed Governor Abbott, so he got involved. So now you've got the Ag Commissioner, you've got the Attorney General, and you've got the governor getting involved in Republican primary races. And so apparently we made a difference, because we got 8 or 9 of them. There's another 8 or 9 in runoffs, and 5 of them just threw in the towel and said, "I quit. I'm not up to this.
Quit before I get fired."
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I do, you know, it's a funny thing. I have that same, and you do hear people on the national scene especially saying, Democrats band together, Republicans criticize each other, we should all be quiet, we should not criticize each other. But it's gotten us to the point that when our leaders capitulate or they move to the left and they compromise our values, we feel like we're not supposed to say anything. But at some point, our values are being overrun by the left. And no one on our side thought until recently that it was okay to speak up. Now I think people are realizing you have to speak up in many reasons.
Enough is enough. We've had enough. The grassroots are livid. They're you know, taking it to them. We're not putting up with that anymore. It's going to be a new day in the Texas House. We're going to have a new way of electing the speaker, because the current speaker, Phelan, is not returning. He's not even going to not return as speaker, but he's not going to return as the state representative. He's not even going to hold his office. After the runoff.
Well, that's good to hear. Glad to hear that. So I want to take a moment. Everyone's happy about that. One reason I wanted to have you on today is to thank you also for endorsing my race. You know I'm running for
absolutely
RNC yeah. committee woman. He made a great ad. Yeah, thank you very much. You made a great ad. I sent it to Emilio. I don't know. Did you get it? Oh, good. You did get it. Okay. So can you put it up here too? So look at this. Isn't this nice right here? So this is our Ag Commissioner, Sid Miller, endorsing me, which I so appreciate. And honestly, for the grassroots in Texas, these things mean a lot. So
this is the logo right here. I don't know if you can see it in the audience, but it said Sid Miller approved. It's got my brand on it.
Okay. Well, you know, I actually am glad you pointed that out. I will tell you, I sent this, when you sent it to me, I sent it to a friend who said, wrote back, "I love the boots." I said, "What are you even talking about?"
Boots.
The boots, the L. L yeah. is a pair of boots. That's pretty cute. That's not why I sent it, because of the boots. But anyway, on a serious note, I really thank you for that, because there is a growing awareness among voters in Texas, really around the country. We want to see who are the patriots, who are the fighters, and who are the ones who just go and get along. So your endorsement, based on everything else you've done, is just truly helpful. I want to thank you.
Well, thank you for putting yourself forth and taking that on. It's not easy. It's, you know, a thankless job for the most part.
Yes, sir.
You don't get that many attaboys or attagirls, you know, but you get plenty of the other. I promise you will.
I've heard about that already. Yeah, a lot of the other. So anyway, I just truly appreciate that and want to thank you very, very much. And obviously, we are featuring it all over our social media. So
good.
Thank you. And the race goes on. You know, this is not. Now, I didn't even tell you, I was going to ask you this, but are you going to be at the convention, the state convention?
Oh yes, yeah. I've had a booth and the whole day. Last time, I don't know if you came by my booth, but I had a live longhorn steer in the booth.
I did go by your booth, yeah. We talked, me and the steer and I talked, yeah. No,
I had a great idea this time, but I've got to come up with a new one. A friend of mine, Patrick Gotch, runs RFD TV, and he has Trigger, Roy Rogers' horse, stuffed Trigger. And so I talked him into letting me take Trigger to the convention. And we went and looked at him. I don't think he can make the trip. He's pretty. I didn't want to be the one that caused Trigger's head to fall off or something. So I'm going to do something different. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm open for suggestions.
Right into the show. If you have a suggestion, what Sid Miller should bring, Commissioner Miller should bring to the convention. Okay. So you have a booth, and then do you go around to the, I mean, do you really visit folks? I assume you do. It's really, it's a time to make connections.
Right? I do. And you know, I'm very approachable, you know.
I
tell you though, it's a problem because for me to walk across the exhibit hall floor to the convention center, it took me 45 minutes. I'd leave an hour before I'm, you know, supposed to be on stage. I'd just go about 3 foot and somebody wants a picture, and that's fine. We take one, we talk. I'd walk another 3 foot, and it's the same thing over again.
I love it. Yeah, and you are very, very popular among the grassroots because you are very approachable and fun and all that.
I brag a little bit. I got more votes than anybody in the last election, more than Abbott, Patrick, all of them. So,
facts are facts.
There you go. Yeah, pretty proud of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I do want to talk. So I love what you've done. First of all, I love your political activity. I'm really grateful you're still doing it. You could just be ag commissioner. It's a full-time job. It's a big agency with a lot of serious issues going on. So you could just do that, but I love you're staying involved in the political scene. So I do want to run through some of the issues facing your agency.
Sure.
And I will tell you that I don't know if you even have a role in this or what, but I was reading about how Texas farmers are suing to fight to block the USDA from using race in distributing farm aid. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has race as a factor as to how they distribute farm aid. I should throw ahead. Do you know anything about that? And can you
I know a little bit about that. I already sued the Biden administration one over that very, very thing. I set the precedence on that, and it was not long after Biden had got elected, they came out with a pandemic relief for farmers. And we got hit pretty hard. If you'll remember, we had chickens and hogs that couldn't get through the processing plants, and cattle were backed up, and it was a mess. We had to euthanize them, and we lost a lot of money. So I'm for helping the farmers. But their idea was, if you had a USDA loan or USDA guaranteed loan, they would just forgive it at 120%. Even if you just made it last week. I didn't sue for that. What I sued for, to be eligible, you had to be black or minority. White people need not apply. And that just flew all over me. They said, well, you can't say anything about it. I said, baloney. I said, that's racism. Oh, that's reverse racism. No, it's not. It's basing a government benefit on the color of your skin. We don't do that.
Yeah.
So I sued as an individual farmer, made it a class action lawsuit.
Okay.
I didn't use the taxpayer dollars.
Yep.
America First Legal represented me, Stephen Miller and his bunch.
God bless them.
And
I love them.
We won that one, hands down. So they went back, and now they kind of redid it, and they're kind of basing it on economically disadvantaged, which kind of sort of is based on race a little bit. And that's what this lawsuit's on. So.
Okay, so your agency is not formally, like officially involved in this litigation.
No, I did that personally.
Okay, yeah. Actually, it's kind of one of the lines I was wondering about, because you're such a proponent of, you know, basically law and order and following the law and making and really encouraging farmers and ranchers and enabling them to have abundant, you know, crops and supply and everything that we need in Texas. And so did your agency, do you on behalf of farmers sue the government on other things? Is that part of what you do?
Well, I didn't. I sued the Biden administration in my capacity as ag commissioner. Of course, I run the nutrition programs. I think we've mentioned this. I'm responsible for 5 million school meals each day. So Biden set down this executive order. He said, if you don't comply with my executive order, we're not going to feed your kids. We're going to let them go hungry. And his executive order was he wanted us to follow his LGBTQ agenda. He wanted us, you know, to have, you know, drag time story hour and gender neutral bathrooms and let the boys play girl, all that crazy stuff. And I said, we're not doing that in Texas. And so I got my lawyer. Y'all know my lawyer, Ken Paxton.
And, we know him,
right?
Yeah.
Good lawyer. And we sued him. And we won. And not only are we not doing it in Texas, no state is having to do that. And I've sued him other times, too. So far, I'm batting 1,000%. I haven't lost one yet.
way to go. I will say in that particular one, that is just, you know, the left tries to say, we're the ones that care about children. We want to feed them. They would feed all children breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So they were no longer, didn't even need a family. But in any case, they were willing to cut off food to force this LGBTQ thing.
They were using
schools.
Food as a weapon.
It's truly evil. I mean, honest to goodness, the kids were going to not, and I think they probably assumed most schools would say, fine, okay, well, we'll do whatever you say. Don't take the food away. So it took Texas standing up.
Yep.
I love that.
We
love
led
that.
The way.
Okay, so there have been a bunch of disasters. Yeah, that's right. a bunch of disasters in the farmland here. And I want to just talk about this most recent thing. This was a couple of days ago, I think, that you had to announce that Cal-Maine Foods in Farewell, Texas, it's a great name, Farewell, Texas, 40 miles west. Anyway, you had a dairy farm and you ended up having to cull chickens there due to H5N1 bird flu.
What?
And so basically, how does that even come to your attention, number one? And how do you figure out what to do about that? I mean, that's a massive problem as ag commissioner when you have birds, you have chickens infected, and you've got to do something.
Well, I knew about it long before anybody else because the director of the CEO of the company called me as soon as they found out and alerted me. So what it is, it's bird flu. We've had this around Texas. We kind of missed out on it, and it spread by migratory waterfowl. So this is Farwell, Texas. It's an egg operation. When that happens, we have to depopulate all the hens. So we had to put down 1,600,000 chickens and about 400,000 pullets, you know, little small ones. So none of the eggs got out. And if they had, I don't think it would matter. Could we, when you cook the eggs, it kills the pathogen. The only person I ever saw eat raw eggs was Rocky Balboa. And I don't, you know, I don't think anybody does that anymore. So we're saying, but there's three legs to this stool. That was one. The other one was we had a mysterious disease running through our dairy herds in West Texas in the panhandle. We couldn't figure out what we tested for every cattle disease known, and we couldn't figure it out. And then somebody said, hey, there's a lot of dead birds around this dairy. Maybe we should test for bird flu. Well, cows have never gotten bird flu. It's bird flu, not cow flu. So we tested for that, and sure enough, they were positive for bird flu. We'd never had that. Now, these cows didn't get that sick. They kind of like they had the flu for a week, and they got over it. So we didn't, thank goodness, we didn't have to depopulate and kill all those milking cows. And it was only the milking cows, and it was only about 10% of the milking cows. So there's no milk shortage, and none of that got into the food system. But if it had, again, we pasteurized milk for the most part. And it would have killed the pathogen. So, you know, if you want to be cautious, maybe lay off raw eggs and unpasteurized, you know, dairy products. But then the third leg, we had a dairy worker come down with bird flu, which is almost unheard of. And mild case, the only symptoms he had the pink eye for a few days. And he got over it. That's only our second case. We had one in 2022 in Colorado. So I don't want to panic anybody. You know, that's one person out of 341 million. I think we're okay. I don't think it's going to be a pandemic. A lot of people are, you know, trying to scare people that, but we're fine.
But this gentleman who came down with bird flu, he was fine within a week or something.
Yeah, probably 3 or 4 days. I mean, it didn't take long to get over pink eye.
So even to know, yeah, that's true. So even to know that was a problem, he obviously went to the doctor to whatever.
Sure, tested for it.
So I got to go back to the chickens. You're saying you had to destroy all those chickens, and if the eggs had been baked or cooked, that you would have killed the pathogen anyway? That's
sure.
Amazing.
But you just can't gamble.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't take any chance. I mean, a half a percent is too much to gamble with. So, and you think about that. You know, we helped those eggs for about a week, and 1,600,000 chickens laying an egg a day, that's millions and millions of eggs. We had to destroy those, too.
Yeah.
We couldn't let those go.
Well, now you're making me worry because I do like to eat, if you mix cookie dough and before you bake it, it tastes kind of good to eat it raw eggs. Now,
there you go.
I probably shouldn't do that.
Maybe not for a few days anyway. hold off for a week. The good news is I think we're out of the woods. We haven't had a new case of bird flu in 2 weeks. It's carried by migratory waterfowl. They're gone. You know, they're up headed north to their nesting grounds. So I think we've got about 10 months before they migrate back down here. So we've got some time to figure out how to deal with this.
Okay. And the cows, they must have, how did they got bird flu? They came into contact with the bird somehow.
Somehow, we don't know. Of course, there were dead birds on the dairy, and that's, we know, probably there was a pond that had waterfowl on it. The cows probably drank out of the pond, and that's, we think that's probably how they got it.
Okay.
It was contaminated water.
Okay. So, yeah. I mean, these are big, big things in Texas. I mean, those kind of things, people assume the government is going to make sure everything's safe, that we end up, the meat we buy, the eggs we buy, everything will be fine. But your agency has to be on top of every potential outbreak, figure out the source, and then deal with it in really an unfortunate way sometimes. Yeah. I mean, big, big things. Yeah. I just think that's, you where it comes down to. You are where it comes down to, you and your agency.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping us safe.
If it goes bad, they point the finger at me. If it goes good, I don't get any accolades, but
okay.
If it goes bad, I'm responsible.
We're getting accolades here right now. We're getting accolades right now. That's right. Yeah. Also, there was a wildfire. I mean, there was a state of disaster wildfire that burned over 1 million acres of pasture land. This was in February and killed about 7,000 beef cattle. I mean, it wouldn't be directly agriculture, except this is really an assault on the cattle industry, this kind of stuff. Massive.
It was as bad a fire as we've ever had. We've never had one that bad. It was almost the largest fire in the United States ever. So it was 1,300,000 acres, 2,000 square miles. We lost somewhere between 7,000 and 10,000 head of cattle, but that number doesn't reflect the damage to the cattle. So a lot of them had to be sold and salvaged. Their hooves were burnt, their udders were burnt, you know, where they couldn't nurse. And then for the next 6 months, we're probably going to be culling more cattle because of lung problems, you know.
Oh, breathing the smoke.
Smoke is burnt in the lungs, so they're going to have pneumonia type symptoms. So we'll continue to cull those off. We lost over 100 miles of electric lines. So all those communities up there in the Panhandle had no electricity. The livestock had no water. The electric, you know, the pumps, the wells wouldn't work. We lost thousands of miles of fence. We closed 16 schools and evacuated them. Two of them got fire damage. It's, you know, we lost over 500 houses and barns up there just destroyed. And these families, a lot of them have been up there a long time. They lost everything they had, all their livestock, their vehicles, their equipment.
I've lost track. Is this a fire? Do we know the cause of this fire?
Yes, we do. There's usually three things that cause a fire like this. This one was power lines. We get those really high winds in West Texas, and some of those lines get to flopping like that, and they'll arc, and that'll start a fire. Or when they arc, it blows out a transformer, and the transformer throws out sparks. This one, actually, the high wind was rocking the pole, and the pole broke off and landed in the grass. And of course, that started the fire. Other is lightning, and the other is railroad trains having a bearing go out in one of those steel wheels, and the sparks come off the rail cars start a lot of fires.
That is so interesting. I never knew that last part at all.
That's one of the most common ones.
Yeah, that's quite amazing. So last time you were here, and I know we did it once, but I do think, long as we're featuring you in the Agricultural Commission in Texas, you have a massive agency. And I just love you tell people all that your agency does, because I think, you know, you're just known as honest to goodness. Everyone loves your white hat, and everyone loves your, you know, and we're going to talk about rodeo in a minute, but just what your commission does. Would love to have you tell everybody about that.
Well, you know, you have to go get your sleeping bag. It'll take a while, but it's a $7 billion agency. And so we're the consumer protection agency. So I'm responsible for every barcode scanner in the state, making sure they're accurate, every scale in the state. Pesticide, we make sure your pets and your children don't get poisoned. We're the, you know, the food and nutrition I've already mentioned. We, you know, do the school lunches, but we also feed the elderly. We have summer feeding programs for the kids. We help fund Meals on Wheels. We stock area food banks. We have a surplus food program that we supply area food banks with. We have a great marketing program, the Go Texan program. It's a global program. You know, we do export pens. I'm over rural health care. 191 counties look to me for rural health care.
What does that mean? You make sure there's a facilities close enough? And, I mean, what does that mean, rural health care?
Several years before I was, it used to be in Health and Human Services. And these small rural counties and small rural municipal hospitals just couldn't get any attention. It all went to the big cities. So we broke that out and put it on the Department of Agriculture. So what I do is I make sure that they're taken care of. We draw down federal dollars that we send up there. It's our money. So I get it back and we help them buy x-ray machines or mammogram machines or, you know, whatever. We, you know, I had to pull money down to keep them open during COVID. They almost closed during COVID. And my inspectors, we brought their trucks in and we worked with our Go Texan members and they made, the distillery started making hand sanitizers and we got masks. And we got gowns and you couldn't get anything delivered. So we loaded all up in our trucks and we went all these rural parts of the state delivering PPE equipment to the hospitals and first responders and nursing homes. And so that's what we do. Yeah,
a lot of it really, as I say, the kind of thing people just assume in a civilized country like America, an advanced, you know, country like in Western civilization, all these things somehow happen. We have rural health care, we have distribution of food, but it actually takes pragmatic work like you do.
One new thing in the rural health care that's a project of mine that I've only had it not running almost 2 years. But I realized that we had some mental health gaps in rural Texas. And it might surprise you to know that the two highest occupations for suicide are veterans and farmers. And farmers are number one. So we have a suicide hotline, 988, but you call it, they don't really know how to talk to a farmer. I mean, they're a different breed.
Sure.
So I farm my own. And I don't like to call it the suicide hotline. That's just kind of has a stigma to it. So I call it the agri-stress helpline. And my people have 300 hours of training in mental health, and they're trained for to send these ag people for, you know, programs at the USDA or the TDA. I have a program that I can help them financially. Or we might send them to the SBA, or the Farm Bureau may have some help for them. But we also get them mental health, you know, in their community, so they don't have to drive to a metropolitan area to get that. So it's been up and running, and I created it right about the time of the Uvalde shooting, which is a rural area, and those families are all ag work, you know, working the ag field. And so far, we've kept about 200 farmers from taking their lives. So we're pretty proud of that one. It's worked well in this fire situation because those people are under a lot of stress.
Yeah. You know, leaving aside, this may be too hard a question or too off outside of your world, but one thing, if you have a fire or something specific happens and what you thought your beautiful farm and your cattle, whatever you had, is just gone and you're feeling lost. But even if you don't have an emergency like that, I think farmers, I've been reading about this a little bit, they feel under pressure. They feel under stress. I mean, they have one bad season of bad weather is one example, but just, you know, making ends meet, selling enough. I mean, and they're kind of isolated. I mean, we don't live in the city. You can't talk to your neighbor next door.
Well, there are, and farmers, not this is a general statement, so not all of them, but a lot of them are introverts. They stay out on the farm 12, 16 hours a day on the tractor or horseback or in the milking parlor. They're very proud and independent. They just will not ask anybody for help, you know. And they may be the sixth, seventh, eighth generation on that family ranch or family farm.
It's like
and now
duty.
They've missed three crops and all their notes are being called.
Yeah.
You know, it comes to a point when you're like that, you don't really own the land anymore. The land owns you. You're part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got the responsibility of your family heritage. You're the one that's going to lose it.
Yeah.
So that's why we needed a special mental health helpline for those people in that situation.
I love that. What did you call it? Instead of calling it suicide, you called it?
Agri-stress helpline.
Agri-stress, yeah.
And you can just Google that. And the good news is other states have picked up on it. We've got it running in about 10 states now. So it looks like we're going to get it nationwide. I've talked to the chairman of the Ag Committee in the House, W.T. Thompson. He's going to try to put it in the farm bill for us.
I love that. That's very thoughtful, very very tailored to the agriculture world. No one else in government would even think about that, but your agency does.
Well, anyway, that's what we do on rural health. That's some of the stuff we do.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so I had a funny thought. I'm going to turn to your rodeo life in a minute, but before we get to rodeo, you know, I had a funny thought about how, you know, when Trump ran, he really pushed, this is back 2015, 16, he began the phrase of America first, and he really tried to say, you know, when he pushed that idea, in my view, what he really did was wake people up to how much leftism was denigrating the idea of America. It wasn't overt. I mean, you know, when Obama ran saying, yeah, we're going to fundamentally transform, or as I say, fundamentally destroy America.
Yeah.
But over decades, it was just continue hacking away at the idea of America. And so you had kids finishing high school, and they've been told that our founders were bad people, and they were all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So Trump did an enormous thing when he made people realize, look what the left is teaching, is saying about you, America, and Americans. Look what they're doing to America. And I think America's pretty great. And we want to have them first. We want the policies to bring jobs back. We want a secure border. We want a strong military. I mean, he made people feel pride about America. So my analogy is that I was reading some of the things you do in pushing Texas agriculture, not just, the things you described are wonderful, but you also represent Texas agriculture around the world. It's kind of like Texas first for food or something like that.
Yeah.
Texas first. I love that. I mean, you really stand for Texas.
Well, it's pretty easy. I mean, I go to a foreign country. I'm just like a magnet with this hat, this big belt buckle, and these boots. Everybody wants to do business with a Texan. At the first of the month, I'm going to Kenya for 10 days on a trade mission. I don't think anybody from Texas has ever tried to sell Kenya anything, but I am. We're going to sell them something. And I get in because I'm a Texan. I wear the white hat, and they just come, you know, they just want to do business with a Texan.
Okay, so how do you arrange that? You find that, is there something in the Kenyan government that is the agricultural equivalent?
Sure, we start correspondence with them. I'm going to Uzbekistan. We've developed a relationship with them. I don't think anybody from Texas has tried to sell them, but they need a lot of stuff that we have. So we've just become too dependent on China buying our agriculture products. Remember when we had the tariff war?
Yeah.
And farmers were dumping their corn and their soybeans on the ground. They didn't have any place left that couldn't sell it, couldn't store it. It was terrible. One state, 49 states lost ag exports, just went in the toilet. One state increased their ag exports, and it was Texas. And it was because we had been out ahead of that, and we found new customers, and we weren't solely reliant on one customer to take our products. So we came through it very well. And we've continued to do that. And so that's why we're going to all these odd sounding countries, and we're going to sell them some grain sorghum and some beef and some powdered milk and all kinds of stuff.
I love that. So you're really pushing, eventually what you're pushing is them to contract with Texas industry to buy this food. I mean, it's not really going through
sure.
agencies.
We don't do just ag products. I've expanded to anything. I mean, we've got Go Texan members like SpaceX is a Go Texan member, Gulf States Toyota, pharmaceutical companies. We'll promote anything Texas. I mean, I'm there anyway, so why not?
Yeah, oh, I love all that. And I will say also, in Kenya and places like that, many places in the world, they have a specific kinds of agriculture they can do based on their climate, specific things they can grow, things they can't grow. To have a supply chain so they don't feel if they have a bad year with a drought or whatever they have, I just kind of love that notion that not just Texas products are going, but Texas products can go around the world and help people when the farmers are producing in Texas and countries are starving or have some issue. I love that. That's like facilitating the health and well-being of other countries. And that's really...
I had an office in Argentina for a while, a trade office, because the... South America was trying to upgrade their livestock genetics. So we sold them a lot of breeding stocks, semen, embryos, things like that. So that was really good. So we do some odd things.
I've never heard of those things. I mean, you do amazing things at Miller, honest to goodness. So you're trying to help them. I mean, I guess I can see that. They have, if they've been really insular, they've had whatever cattle they have there, but whatever diseases can breed in or weaknesses, and so you bring fresh stock,
new genetics,
essentially.
New genetics, yeah.
I never even knew that. Wow, that's very, okay. So I do want to talk, we offer our audience a chance to ask questions in just a few more minutes, but I want to hit on your rodeo stuff too. Okay, so I told you before, I grew up in upstate New York. So I never saw, in a small town, it could have been anywhere, it could have been in Texas, but it was upstate New York. But I never saw a rodeo until I came here. And honest to goodness, I could not believe how much fun it was. I mean, you know, and you see these kids, okay, this is an aside, but you see these kids at the Texas State Fair who have spent their life on a ranch, and they come in with their prize cow, their prize bull, whatever it is, and it's like their pet. It's mm-hmm. like I thought my puppy growing up. And but I mean, these people are so anyway. And so having rodeo, having people more wedded to the lifestyle of ranches and farms and cattle, it just is a robustness about that in Texas that's just so dang cool. Yeah. So you can brag a little bit. You have a lot. You also involved in the rodeo world. So yes. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, I raise American Quarter Horses and have a unique operation. I have my own stallions and mares. So I raise the colts. I raise them up. I break them. I train them. I compete on them. And I've raised and trained 25 world champions off my ranch. Have come out of my breeding program and training program. And I've I rode them all, but I think my son rode three of them. The rest of them I rode myself. So I still do it. I was competed at the Dixie National last month and won the tie down roping there.
Okay, I saw that on Facebook. You put that on Facebook, or someone did.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So tell me again what you won. What's it called?
It's tie down roping. It's one cowboy, and you let a calf out, and you run out there about 35 miles an hour, rope the calf, step off a perfectly good horse, run down the rope, pick the 250-pound calf up, throw him down, tie three legs, throw your hands up. You try to do that in 10 seconds or less.
So. Oh, my gosh. And you do that?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. That's amazing. I've never tried that. I probably never will my whole life. But not my thing.
No,
I do other things. Yeah. Anyway, that's amazingly
fun. Take up
fun.
Western Pleasure, one of those nice, slow events. It'd be good. It'd be perfect.
Yeah, or I could just be cheering also from
go.
The audience. That'd be my job. I'll cheer you on. But on a serious thing, there's something about preserving the ranch and Western lifestyle, farm lifestyle, that just, it's so uniquely Texan. And not, I mean, other states have it too, but not like Texas. But I mean, what you do is kind of preserves all that. I mean, not just in the, as ag commissioner, but also just your involvement in rodeo. You keep that whole world going. Because we went to a rodeo in Fort Worth. I know, actually we went because it was a concert we really wanted to see that they had in the middle of the rodeo. But I was blown away by how many families were there, every single kid in the family, all dressed up in their Western gear and totally involved in watching all the radio events. We were watching and we were cheering them on, but then the great concert came. I can't remember who it was, but somebody famous, some country Western singer. They wrap it up. We were cheering. We had a great time singing along. We got up because the concert was over. The rodeo was picking up again. We were the only ones leaving. Honestly, everyone else was still sitting there watching the rodeo. We felt kind of bad.
That's like, perfect. You know, and this, the audience may know the answer to this, but I doubt it. The number one attended sporting event in the United States.
Super Bowl. No.
No. Sport. I mean, a sport as a whole.
Okay.
Which would be football in that case. What do you think it is?
You're going to tell me it's rodeo?
It's rodeo. It has more fans, more attendees than any other sport. But there's a junior high rodeo. There's a youth rodeo somewhere every night. There's amateur rodeos. There's professional rodeos. I mean, the Houston rodeo will have 80 or 90,000 people every performance. And that's like a Super Bowl.
It is.
Yeah. But they'll have 21 performances. You only have one Super Bowl a year. You have 21 performances at Houston, but you also have the same thing at San Antonio and Fort Worth and Austin. And so, yeah, it's a highly attended event.
Oh, it's very, very cool. I'll tell you something else. In this era, when people are lamenting about kids, main entertainment in life is on their phone doing this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And parents are saying, why don't you go out and play? And so they go outside with their phone to this. I mean, seriously, you know, when we were growing up, obviously I didn't have a cell phone. So we did run around the neighborhood until my parents said, if it gets dark, you know, I got to come home. And that's all we did in our neighborhoods. And kids ran around and played kickball and whatever we played. But this, having rodeo and a kind of ranch life be really active in Texas and be like a thing that appeals to people, it keeps people, it's more wholesome. You're out in life, you're out with animals and ranches and farms. You're like, you're fighting that culture of the cell phone and also just the culture of just learning about life from watching a picture of a rodeo.
And you know, parents love it because it keeps their kids out of trouble. I mean, they've got, and then it teaches them responsibilities, how to care for an animal. You know, you got to feed them and brush them and bathe them and clip them and exercise them. And, you know, it builds a lot of life skills. It really does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll probably never have those life skills either, but I do really love it. And I know there's so much effort to get kids, and our kids got involved in sports, which is the same thing. You know, if they will get out of the house and go play whatever sport they play, you know, not just be sitting home. But there's really because on a serious note, before we turn to questions, on a serious note, the more social media and the more your phone and your computers control your life, the more your kids' view of everything is shaped by whoever's deciding what's allowed to be on your phone, what's allowed to be on Facebook, what's allowed to be in any social media outlet. It is big social media companies controlling that. Oh, yeah. And when your kids are not doing that and they're living life, they're more wholesome. They're more connected to life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I'm really impressed. And plus, it's really fun. We did. Okay. Last thing. I'm serious now. We're going to have questions. Somebody have a, you have a microphone? Okay. We have a microphone. We love to take questions. And all we really ask, if you have a question, to speak right into the microphone, because it has to go not just to the room. It has to go out on air. So speak right in the microphone. And you can ask. Don't ask me questions, because you can talk to me afterwards. But ask Commissioner Mueller anything you want to ask about. I mean, I have more questions I can always do. But I end up doing this. I talk too long, and then we're out of time. So this time I caught myself. I'd love to have your questions. If anybody has any questions.
I love questions.
I do too.
My favorite part.
Me too.
Thank you for enlightening us about the Department of Agriculture. I have several questions, but my top one is this. I recently heard Tom Oliverson.
Oliverson, yes.
He's he was chair of insurance. He has thrown his hat in the ring for chair.
For speaker.
Now, when Dave Covey beats Dade, will he throw his hat in the ring also, and it'll be between the two of them? Or do you know of anybody else who's running?
Probably won't be David Covey. He's a freshman. I just don't think it's possible to, you know, for him to think that he'd be qualified to be speaker. I mean, you need to have at least one or two terms under your belt. You got to know where the bathrooms are at least, right? And so it'll take a, I mean, he couldn't even list off the names of the committees, much less know which members would be the optimum choice to put in charge. You know, I don't know Tom. I don't think I've ever had a conversation with him, but I watched his interview the other day and I was impressed. Seemed like a guy I could get behind in sport. He's right on all my issues. You know, I don't want any Democrat chairs. He will end that. He talks like he'd let the members, you know, represent their districts and not micromanage, you know, the outcome of the legislation and votes. And that's what we need. He wants to work with the Senate instead of against them, instead of being a roadblock. We need that. We could get a lot of good stuff done if we could get those two bodies working together. And he doesn't seem like he cares who gets the credit. And that's the kind of leader we need. We've got too many politicians in Austin and not enough statesmen. We need more statesmen. So he comes across that way. We'll see.
I'm impressed with him, too.
Hi, Sid Miller. Okay, I have an idea for the convention, is that you need to bring a dog. A great dog that's well trained and that people can pet. That would be my vote.
Okay, a dog. Okay,
yeah. And then secondly, I've been thinking about.
I was
Debbie.
Thinking more of a pony or something.
Well, we're less. Everybody loves dogs unless they don't. But I mean, most of us do. But anyway, Debbie, I'm visualizing us on horses, like with the flags, where we don't have to ride the horses very far, but we could have the Texas flag and the American flag. So you figure out how we can do that at a rodeo. That'd be fun. What I wanted to ask you is, you know, there's a lot of preppers out there that are talking about possible food shortages and famine. And I was listening to Tucker. He was on talking with a priest yesterday, and he was talking about the starvation, that a lot of what's going on in Gaza is that there's no food. And that they're, even if they could, the people don't want to leave certain areas because they're afraid, you know, to migrate out to the unknown, but they don't have food. But listening to you talk about feeding all these kids and you know, losing all these chickens and all these different things, what's your take on upcoming famine, and what kinds of things should we as citizens be prepared for?
You know, the American farmer has always rose to the level of it needs. You know, we always learned, we learn how to produce more with less. That's our constant challenge. That never changes. So, you know, when our country was founded, and even when Texas was a republic, 98% of the people were farmers. I mean, you didn't have a, you know, Kroger's, or you just, if you didn't raise it or kill it, you didn't eat, you know. So, but today, we're less than 2% of the population. Less than 2% of us feed the other 98%. So, but we're really, really good at it. We're into what I call agriculture 3.0, which is the technology age. And we're using that. We're using genetic engineering, all kinds of stuff. The thing that bothers me, and we didn't talk about this, but I think it could end up being as dangerous to our country as open borders, and that's Biden's 30 by 30 plan. A lot of people haven't heard about that, but he wants to idle 30% of our productive land by the year 2030, and that's phase one. And phase two is the 50-50 plan. He wants to take 50% of our land out of production by the year 2050. And it's to control world population. And he's not by himself. Europe is doing it. They're way ahead of us. You might have seen in the news some of these tractorcades and these farmers that are protest. That's what it is. You know, they outlawed nitrogen fertilizer. They want them to get rid of half their livestock. You know, it's just, they want to take away half their land. They've revolted, a lot of those. They threw the leader out of Netherlands, just threw him completely out of office. Sri Lanka overthrew their whole government and said, we're not doing that. So it's a real thing. But that scares me more than farmers not making a good crop, is them manipulating, taking land out of production.
Okay, I do want to jump in. We do have another question right here, but I'm very sorry we didn't get to that. This larger question, concern about, is there a plan to try to essentially diminish food supply, to bring about a food shortage? We have all those fires or mysterious problems that destroyed food processing plants. If you see it as an agenda, or there's all just circumstantial, just happened to happen, and you feel concerned about things happening here as part of an agenda?
The 30-30 plan is a definite agenda. I mean, it's definitely an agenda. Now, when we had all the processing plants, the fires, and we took a real serious look at that. And what I found was it was slightly higher than what it normally would be, but not much. And my conclusion was, the cowboy logic kicked in. It had something about lack security during COVID and those plants not being occupied and not being kept up. And so I don't think it's a conspiracy theory to shut down our plants, at least not yet. I didn't find that in my research.
Okay, but the 30 by 30 is the government owns 30% of the agricultural land, of the whole of the land by 2030.
That's the plan. Take 30% of our production out by the year 2030.
If you are the advocate for this, if you're the Biden team, what's the reason? What's the justification?
It's to control world population.
And do they say that, or you're surmising that?
No, that's it. And it's a global plan. And once they can control the food stores, they can control the people. And so that's the socialist plan. I mean, that's it. That's why they work.
Completely agree. Completely agree. I want to get, okay, go ahead. Sorry, excuse me. Go ahead, please go ahead, and then we want to back too.
You know about the open borders, everybody does. How has it impacted the agricultural? I mean, I know they come over here to work.
Some.
They used to, yeah.
But I mean, they say the border farms on the border have a lot of difficulty. Could you address that?
Yeah, well, in response to the open borders, I'm pretty familiar with that. When I served in the House, I was chairman of Homeland Security and Public Safety under Rick Perry, and I had the charge of, you know, shutting the border down. So I've got to know all those ranchers down there and those county sheriffs, and it's awful. I mean, I could tell you some stories that would just curdle your blood. I mean, it's bad. But those ranchers, a lot of them can't even go on their place. They're scared for their lives. And their property values, they can't get anybody interested in buying that property, in the shape, and the trash everywhere, and they run through their fences and they destroy their infrastructure. You know, they have to have, when you go out on one of those ranches, you got to have somebody in the truck with you, because if you get out to open a gate, they steal your truck when you get out of it. So, and just, I mean, it's terrible. It's really, really awful. Now then, I'd like to announce that I have a plan to secure and close that border. And it'll 100% work.
Okay.
Would you like to know what it is?
Yes, we do. Yes, we all do.
Re-elect Donald Trump. That's it. I mean, he's done it before. I mean, he shut it down to a trickle. I mean, just put him in there. He'll take care of it. So
absolutely.
That's my plan.
On the back.
Hi there. Thank you for being here. Did you say that the Department of Health and Human Services falls under your jurisdiction?
It does not.
Oh, it does not.
State Office of Rural Health is under my department.
Okay.
Health and Human Services is actually a governor appointees run okay. that. It's under the governor's office.
What about the 7 health clinics that used to monitor the refugees that came in under the Refugee Resettlement Program? Do those don't fall under yours?
Not under my jurisdiction. So unqualified to answer your question.
Okay. The state of Texas used to be accountable for doing health checkups for refugees that came in through that program because we're paying for them,
right.
Our tax dollars. And so they had to send a report. And about 5 years ago, they stopped counting because the tuberculosis and the lead levels of these people was so extreme.
Oh,
and they just stopped doing the report.
Yeah.
But they still get a Medicaid card when they come in, paid for on our tax dollars, and operate 7 healthcare clinics that our tax dollars pays for in the state of Texas.
And we also contract with NGOs, non-government organizations, to do similar things to process them. They don't test them for COVID. They don't test them for TB. I mean, none of that stuff. And they make a lot of money doing not much. So
what's your cowboy logic tell you about why the Biden administration doesn't enforce the border?
Well, it's all political, obviously. You'd think they would think these people someday will be able to vote, but it's not, and that may be true. But something more expedient than that is when we take the census, everybody's counted. So if we've got, you know, an extra 30,000 living in a congressional district, well, we might, Texas, we might get an extra 4 or 5 congressmen, or California might get 4 or 5 extra congressmen, or some other liberal state. So they're trying to initially manipulate the electoral college and the number of congressmen that is allocated to those high populated states. So I tell everybody, Texas is growing. We have 1,050 new Texans every day and 10,000 illegal ones every day. So,
yeah,
and it's true.
That was one thing Donald Trump did try to do in his first term was when the census came up, he was present. He said either don't count illegal aliens or count them in a different category so that we know citizens, which
sure,
really should be driving the representation in Congress.
Right.
But he got very few Republicans standing with him. And he got, of course, the Democrats just had a meltdown about it. So it got dropped. He couldn't push that through. But that idea for the next census to say, we're going to know whether your status is legal or illegal, it has to happen because you're exactly right. You're getting more representation of left-wing districts that allow illegal aliens to live there in Congress. It was something like 13 additional Democrat seats.
Yes. Yes. That's probably a minimum. It's the rates are coming in because we don't have really the full numbers that are coming in.
It's staggering. Okay, do we have one more question? Go right ahead.
I love what you are doing about selling Texas products in Kenya and all over the world. And I would love to see you expand that to having some kind of a fair where it covers everything that's made locally, that is grown, manufactured, and sold, wherever, because I think that would help change the culture and make people aware how much we're buying that's produced without any auspices of any government, our government, and, is harmful to us, like a lot of the Chinese products are. And there's a wonderful film, and I would have to send it to Debbie to send on, about how every can of tomato sauce in this country is grown by tomatoes in China, and they don't even eat tomatoes. And so there is one producer, Sun Gold, and they're in smaller groceries and Mexican groceries where they are grown and processed and canned in this country. And I'm sure there's more. Why don't we focus on those and support them?
Well, I'm going to invite you to our Go Texan Fair. We've in our second year, we're already doing that. We have it in conjunction with Bob Phillips Country Reporter Fair in Waxahachie. So it's, you kind of get a twofer. If you haven't been to that, you would really enjoy it. But we promote it in many other, we have our own TV show. Well, I've done over 90 episodes. It comes on every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on the RFD TV network. It's called Texas Agriculture Matters. And it's a lot like Country Reporter. We just showcase the best that, you know, Texas has to offer. So tune in. We have our own NASCAR team. We have a race car, the Go Texan race car, number 22 truck that we use to promote our Go Texan products. So we do a lot of stuff kind of out of the box.
Sid Miller, this was too much fun. I want to thank you very much for coming in today. I appreciate that. I appreciate all you do as Ag Commissioner. I want to thank you again for endorsing my campaign and really for all of your political work.
You're going to win. I only endorse winners, so you're a winner.
Thank you very much. I'd like to take that to the bank. I also want to thank you for tuning in to America Can We Talk. Our guest next Thursday is Dr. Richard Bartlett, and he was on the show back in July of 2020. During the pandemic, and we had a great show where he was basically talking about you don't need to wait for the vaccines, all these great things already will be helpful. He actually released the information about inhaled budesonide has become under great assault from the Texas Medical Board and other places for simply saying a lot of great things work to help you with COVID, and he's just an extraordinary doctor, been speaking around the country, so he's here next week. And a few weeks after that, we're not so sure about, because this campaign is kind of making me busy. But I do want to urge our listeners to go to my campaign website, which is Debbie G for RNC, the digit 4, DebbieGForRNC.com. You can read everything there about my endorsements. I'm just grateful and proud of all the endorsements I've received. Consider endorsing yourself. You can just write down whatever you want to say. You don't have to be a Texan to endorse, but I'd love if you would. And also, if you know people are going to be going to the Texas State Convention, be delegates, urge them also to take a look at that website. This is all about who's going to represent Texas. One woman, one man, and the state party chair represent Texas on the RNC, and I'm running to be the woman from Texas. So with that note, I want you to thank you very much. And thank you for tuning in to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiadis. The show is America Can We Talk. The website is americacanwetalk.org. I do the show to speak truth about America because America matters. And I will talk to you next time.
America, Can We Talk? Truth about America.
Can you hear?